And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Four more hours of fun for you after we gave you 4 hours of fun yesterday. Now, a lot of you got to check it out as you were probably sitting around doing nothing. Darren McFarland, that's me, Will Donick and Chase McCabe alongside Elijah Campbell, manning the board at our game studios. Guys, how we doing?
We're doing. We're feeling good.
Good. Ready to roll.
As Elijah says, we're doing.
Better than Louisville last night?
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. In fact, they just got scored on again. So that just happened.
And certainly wasn't a Florida State
name
game, that's for sure.
No. And Elijah actually just got ejected for targeting. So
can't keep my head up.
Yeah, so we'll need another producer.
Yeah, something we talked about yesterday on the show, and I don't know. I mean, college football, you're asking the NCAA, you're asking conference ADs or ADs and conference commissioners to get together and make the sport a little bit better, in my opinion.
Be proactive in something?
And I don't think they're capable of any of that stuff, so it's probably a lot of just wasting good oxygen. But, I mean, we talked about it, and we saw it over the weekend. It continued last night. Some of them I thought were legit, and I think that's the thing. It's called common sense, folks. You can look at a play and realize that you can't do that. That's a no-no, and so therefore that person should be shown the door. But there are other times when you look at it and say, come on, really? Like, and that happened last night. So it was a little bit of both for me, at least when I saw it, and I know a lot of it's in the eye of the beholder. It's subjective. It's tough to really call, but a couple of them I'm like, no. Kid doesn't deserve to leave the game. Kid doesn't deserve to sit out the half of another game. It's just, it's quite honestly, it's ridiculous. And I know that the officials, the crew would probably come on here and tell us, well, we're going by the letter of the law. We're going by what, you know, the book says. The book of rules says. And okay, that's fine. Then change it. Then get the higher-ups to change it, and let's get a little common sense back in the game. Do we want the, you know, are the big hits, should they still be penalized? Yes. Should there still be stiff penalties for that? Yes. The incorrect hits? Yes. But, man, football plays where both guys lower their head, it's like, what do you want the defender to do? Like on the Montgomery kid for Louisville, like, what do you want him to do on that play? I don't understand. This is not Matrix. The last time I checked, and if you can do that, like in the movie, please show me how. I'd love to be able to Matrix. I can barely bend over and touch my toes. Certainly can't Matrix, but my goodness, it's just four more targeting last night, and I'm sure it's going to continue throughout the college football season.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought what Herb Street said was, I mean, you don't get mad at the refs. It's the rule. It doesn't make the rule right. But they're enforcing a rule. But I agree, it's got to be common sense. I mean, you should be able to look at something and know if there was intent behind it or if it was just a football play. And good on Lane Kiffin too for, you know, he kind of took a wisecrack during his interview, but he said, you know, this Big Ten officiating crew needs to teach us how to tackle.
I mean, yeah, that was you're right. That was a nice way of basically calling out the officials, right? He was doing that in a nice way. He was basically.
He did, but I'm glad he did it.
Yeah.
I totally respect him saying something. I mean, he it's him, so he did it in a very Lane Kiffin way. But yeah, I laughed and then I said, "Good for you. Good for you for saying that," because it just takes away from the game. And I mean, that's what everybody on Twitter was talking about. They weren't really talking about Ole Miss just being dominant. And what Matt Corral did, they were talking about targeting, you know, and that's just that's wrong. It takes away from the kids. Like I said yesterday, I understand the intent behind the rule. I respect the intent behind the rule. There's got to be a better way to execute the rule.
I think next year it'll be changed.
You don't believe that, do you really?
Yeah.
I hope you're right. But what gives you any hope that they could do something?
Just because
that
I think a lot of the – I think when Kirk Herbstreit and Joel Klatt and this becomes a narrative, which I think we'll continue to see. And now that we're past 2020 and into 2021, I think they'll be able to focus on this a little bit more. I think if you come to the conclusion that the players understand what you can't do anymore, then I think it's time to add a tier that you could still have targeting, but it's not an ejection. It's not an automatic ejection. There's something in between what you have now.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, Willie. I mean,
I thought Matt Corral was concussed when he got hit in the head. I don't know how
that
he wasn't concussed.
That is the right call. Yeah. That one we can look at and say, can't do that anymore.
But, and honestly, with what we know about concussions, why wasn't he taken in? He missed one play and then came back in there. Like, why wasn't
he
taken?
He didn't miss a play, I don't think.
I think he missed one
play. No, he did miss a play.
Did he miss a play? Okay. I must have missed that. But.
Well, whether he did or not, he popped right back up and was back in there. Why was he not taken into a observation room or wasn't even discussed? Why?
Yeah, I mean, like,
he got smoked right in the head. We've seen guys go out for weeks.
Yeah,
for that. I know he's young and everything, but that's
where you got to be. That's the inconsistency of everything. Of, you know, you're preaching player safety, and that's why you put this rule in. And I applaud that. We know more today about concussions than we ever did. In the long-term effects. I've seen the long-term effects firsthand and what they can do. So they need to do that, but be consistent about it. You know, and also, I mean, again, if I'm going after Willie to make a tackle and our heads collide, I think it's pretty easy to tell, was that just a football play and unfortunately they bumped heads because it's a football play? Or did I lead with my helmet and I went for your head? I think it's pretty simple to tell the intent.
I don't know if it's always simple, but
most of the time.
But once again, we go back to, do the defensive players now understand what you can't do? You can't launch. I think after a couple of years, they've got a better understanding of it. Where when they first put the rule in, it was going to take time. People had been playing the same way for years. It was going to take some time for people to learn the hard way that you can't do what James Harrison used to do to people every year.
Yeah, it's right. We're past all that, though. These kids, one, should be getting taught that.
Yes, they've been getting taught that way through high school now.
And be taught that you can't do that anymore. And so, yes, it's still going to happen, even with the rule, as we know. But I just think that so many times we're seeing, because that is a perfect example of that one. Yes, that you can't do that, especially to the quarterback. Like, you know, especially to the quarterback, you cannot do that. But the other one, the Montgomery one, I don't know how you avoid. If you're playing tackle football, I don't know how you get away from doing what he did. The running back lowered his head. He lowered his head. It looked like he was trying to make a clean tackle, and their helmets touched. I don't know what you want him to do. That play. I really don't. I mean, help me understand what he's supposed to do. Is this yet again? And by the way, how many times have we seen this? Because players are smart, and because of the rules, okay, so everything is supposed to be around the legs now, and now what do we see guys doing constantly? College football level, high school level, the pro level, what are they doing now? They're jumping over people. Why? Because they know they're going for the legs.
Right.
Because they're being taught that because – of these rules that we're talking about. Some guys are scared to tackle anything up high because they're afraid they're going to get hit with targeting or a penalty.
Well, and they've also got, especially with quarterbacks, they have penalties if you go for the legs. I mean, because of, you know, Pollard hitting Brady. I mean, you got that stuff of going for the legs like that. So again, I understand player safety and I'm all about it, but you also have people have to understand that it's a dangerous game. I mean, it just is. It's you are tackling people full on. It's like getting hit by a truck every play is the old cliche that they use. I think they know the risks when they sign up to play the game. And, you know, unfortunately, you're going to get hurt sometimes. There are going to be injuries. You can't prevent everything. And so I think you have to, while trying to make the game safer, you also have to try and preserve, you know, that it is football and that's what it is, and we can't have flag football, you know, that's what it becomes. So it's a fine line for sure, but They got to figure this out because it's just I hate this rule.
Like, and Darren, you said the Matrix. I actually, after the blowout happened, I switched over and watched Beverly Hills Cop 2, which I hadn't watched in a long time.
So I
enjoyed it.
Did you give up again? At what point?
Well, Louisville had the ball. Louisville had the ball to start the second half and kicked a field goal, and then Ole Miss came down and scored. Once Corral ran it in there, I was like, okay, I'm moving on. BHC 2, good sequel, enjoyable. Eddie Murphy in his prime.
Sure.
I was on it, and I was entertained the rest of the night. I called it a night after that.
I think this is an interesting text that I just read on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jim says, I think with respect to targeting, they should go to a yellow card, red card system, much like soccer. Second violation gets you kicked out.
I'm okay with that.
I would be totally fine with that.
I'm not opposed to that.
A good discussion.
And they could basically, like, if they review a penalty in soccer and they see that, okay, it's egregious, like you're cleating a guy, it's an automatic red.
Yeah,
it's
a red. Yeah, go right to the red.
Yeah, no, that's right. You have the ability. You have the right to skip.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm fine. Review every play. I do like that they added that a few years ago where they – because remember, once they called it, it was you're gone. There was no –
Yeah, you didn't even review it.
Yeah, now they review it.
But if it's targeting, you're still thrown out, right?
It's still thrown out. You're still thrown out. But and no matter what, it's a 15-yard penalty. Like,
correct.
If they call it, it's a 15-yard penalty.
Correct. So, I think there needs to add a level, I think.
I'm totally fine with that.
So. A lot of people are saying that.
So the yellow card principle would be.
And
I like that.
Do they have to do it just like the soccer refs? Do they have to go right up next
to
the kid?
Oh, I think that would be awesome. That would be sacrilegious to some football people and soccer people. But how that would be pretty amazing if they did do that, where they flash the card.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what I'm asking. Do you do it that way? I mean, I'm okay with that. No?
I know, it is like it's kind of fun watch
it's
a
like
soccer ref.
That's like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but I mean it's all like I appreciate the refs that like in basketball that you got a flashy ref and he's about to tee you up and he's just standing there and he's like he's listening to you and he's nodding his head and then he just bam.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like there are soccer refs that just go bam.
And back when managers used to argue with umpires that.
Oh yeah,
you know they rarely do anymore.
Like it's happening.
Go ahead, keep talking.
Keep talking.
Hand on the hips.
And then the wind up.
Yeah.
Do they have a yellow flag and a red flag that they could actually pull a red flag out and throw it onto the field?
See, well, you got the red beanbag though, so you don't want to get.
Well, you can change the color of that though. You know,
no, I mean, yeah. Well. Could. Maybe. We could workshop this.
We can work on this, yeah. Okay. They have all kinds of turnover props that, you know, are pretty crazy. So you could come up with some sort of prop.
The ejection chain.
I like it. We must break because we're coming back with Paul Feinbaum, our weekly chat with him. But right now I'm going to tell you about the first Sunday of the NFL season. We know it's here. The NFL is about to kick off, and the excitement continues with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. DraftKings is giving all new customers a can't-miss offer to celebrate the return of the NFL season. Yes, you just bet $1 on any football game this weekend and receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. That's right, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet at least $1 on any football game. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that promo code 1025GAME and receive $200 in free bets when you place $1 bet on any game this week in the NFL. That promo code, again, 1025GAME. Get your free $200 in free bets instantly this week. DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD products curated for life. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you here on this Tuesday morning. Hope everyone is having a good start to your day. Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com. Your live and local mortgage expert is on the line with us. Paul, good morning. Thanks for doing this. As always, we're going to have you join into our conversation that we had in the first segment of the show today and yesterday's show, because it continued last night in the Louisville-Ole Miss game. What do you think ultimately, or let me phrase it this way, do you think college football has a problem on their hands with the targeting rule?
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't be talking about it today, but we are. And
yep.
I mean, I'm not a rules expert, and neither are you guys, and I've talked, but we've all talked to enough of them, and I just don't know how you solve it. I mean, it's so subjective, and it's so punitive. I mean, I understand the intent, but then they always, and every time we talk to a rules expert, they make sure we know why the rule is there. But it just always seems to destroy the flow of the game and impact the game.
Do you think ultimately, because, I mean, we talked about, the three of us were together on Saturday. We were doing a fantasy football draft. We were watching the Penn State-Wisconsin game. There was some bad targeting calls, in our opinion, in there that took out some key players. Joel Klatt was going crazy on the rule. Kirk Herbstreit was massaging it a little bit better than Joel did on Saturday, but still both basically saying that they've got to do something about it. Do you think if the announcers, if the broadcast crew continues to say stuff throughout the course of the season, that might force their hand or no?
Yeah. What I think is going to be interesting is whether you'll continue to hear the announcers talking about it. And I say that because I know how network television works. It's important that those guys are arguably the two most influential voices on a game that you can get. So they were heard, and what happens is the average fan who couldn't explain the rule in a million years hears that and go, this must be a stupid rule. So that's positive. Now we'll see what Steve Shaw is a friend of mine, used to be a neighbor. He's the head of the officials for the entire country. Let's see what he has to say about it now.
Yeah, good point. Your takeaway last night, did the worst defense in the country last year massively improve in Ole Miss, or was Louisville's offense, do they just stink? Or is it a little bit of both? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question Ole Miss got better. Because, I mean, they were giving points and yards last year to nearly average teams. But I am almost hesitant to make too many value judgments on anything I see this year against the ACC. Because it was such an embarrassing weekend for that league. And, you know, you don't know really where to go. Where is Louisville rank? I mean, not very high. So I give Ole Miss credit. I mean, they're going. We knew they were going to be a great offensive team. We just didn't think they could stop anyone. They did stop, an average team last night, which is more than they did last year. So I think that is a significant moment for that program.
Saturday night, watched out in L.A., watched UCLA have their way for the most part, really. I thought they were the better team. They deserved to win over LSU. What does this mean for Ed Orgeron and the Tigers moving forward, that loss to the Bruins?
It puts them in dire straits. And I know that sounds absurd on the day after Labor Day, but, you know, you look at they had to win their four games, and, you know, most LSU fans – figured that was a win, and the only games that they were conceding were probably Alabama and maybe at Texas A&M, and now everything is in play. We're talking about a game in 2 weeks from Saturday in Starkville as a critical game, and that shows you how tenuous Ed Orgeron's life raft is, and I don't like to pile on a program that, like so many people in this country, have suffered badly because of this hurricane a week ago, but we're talking football here. And, you know, struggle or no struggle, bad week of practice or no bad week, it was another embarrassing opener for a guy whose credibility is being shattered by the game.
Yeah. We also discussed this yesterday, Paul. I don't know what they can do about it. I feel like they're trying. You know, in 2016, they played USC to start their season. They beat them 52-6. In 2017, they played Florida State, beat them 24-7. I mean, that's compared to the Miami Florida game. That's pretty good. The next year they played Louisville, beat them 51-14. Smoked Duke the next year. Obviously, there was no out of conference game last year. We talked about, I think it was 2012. They played Michigan. I mean, they're trying, but is there any game Alabama could schedule that's gonna, you know, they look good on paper to start the season, but they end up not being games.
No, and there's almost nothing left. yeah, the only you could have put them against Clemson or Ohio State or Oklahoma, but you know, quite frankly, we've seen these games already.
Yep.
I think at this moment, Alabama is in a different league, and you know, we had question marks. The question marks were very simple. Could Bryce Young adapt without the same complement of first round picks that Mac Jones had last year? The answer, yes. Now, you know, can back to a previous statement. You know, what's Miami? I mean, they were a ranked team. They were supposed to be good. They weren't against Alabama. But there's just almost no way to know until you see Alabama play a really good team. And the good news, that comes soon. That comes a week from Saturday. Alabama's schedule is very top-heavy this year. They play at the Swamp a week from the Saturday, and then in 5 weeks they play at Texas A&M. That's when we'll know for sure, but I think we already do.
You know what's interesting is for a long time we kept trying to figure out, you know, who is it? Is it Bill Belichick or is it Tom Brady? Who's really behind basically a run, a dynasty run for almost two decades? Well, it may still be a little premature, and maybe there isn't a right answer. Maybe it was the combination of both. But Tom Brady went away, and he won the Super Bowl, and Bill Belichick didn't even make the playoffs. And who knows if Mac Jones changes that narrative this year. But how do – with what you just said, because you're right, they're just different than everybody else, Alabama. I mean, it's amazing. But they don't have that same quarterback for two – you know, for almost two decades. Like, they change players all the time, and I get it. They keep bringing in – five-star, but Nick Saban is the best ever. But what is it, truly, how have they been able to sustain this type of dynasty run for this long in college football?
At some point the in the age of the CFP, we have seen just a handful of teams who now profit. And they're the same ones that we see in the playoffs every year. And Alabama has just mastered it a little bit better. The amount of great players that are going there is higher than it's been at any time. I mean, you could pick your poison. Maybe 10, 12 years ago, Saban's first recruiting class was epic with Julio Jones and other players. But now they are literally going out and choosing players, and they're making the right choice. And the most important position, let me sound like every analyst in the world, is the quarterback position, and they haven't missed. Jalen Hurts was a legitimate quarterback. He got replaced by an even better guy, and you can debate whether Mac Jones was even better. And he wasn't really even anybody Alabama wanted badly. He was just somebody that, you know, they mildly recruited, and he decided, you know, I want to go there. Bryce Young was in the same class with some of the top players we have right now, and it just, you know, he's developed. You've got great coordinators. You know, say what you want about O'Brien. But as an NFL head coach, but you know, he's certainly adept at the system. And the biggest change for Alabama that we saw for the first three quarters, and I think we'll see most of the year, is the defense. Nick Saban has not had an elite defense in probably 9, 10 years, and we think he has that now. And you can afford losses. Yeah, every school suffers losses the first couple weeks of the season. Alabama lost the a linebacker the other day. They can afford it, and not many other schools can.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, and once again he's brought to you by mtgrt.com, your live and local mortgage expert. So, Paul, I'm desperately looking for new blood here, but I don't know if you're going to tell me that there is any. We've already mentioned, we know Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, the usual suspects. Is there any new blood that could jump in there and have a great season and be in this mix?
You could see Iowa State. They have a huge game this weekend. Cincinnati or a couple of schools, Texas A&M. But we just don't know yet. And even if they make it, does it really matter, I think, is the better question.
Yes.
And, you know, if you look at a snapshot of 1 week, and I think it's dangerous, but hey, what are we supposed to do? That's all we have as a sample. There look like two elite teams right now, and that's Alabama and Georgia. And Georgia didn't even play – I mean, Georgia played a miserable offensive game, but that's all they needed to do. Kirby Smart, with a number of wide receivers and tight ends out and a couple of other players, he gambled. He said, you know what, I'm going to try to win this game on defense. It worked out because Clemson's offense was a total mess against an elite defense, which they don't play normally. When you beat up on Wake Forest and Boston College and Syracuse as your daily ACC diet, you get fat in a hurry.
This is something that I thought about, and I don't know if I'm just making too much of a couple featured games, because Wisconsin-Penn State, you could see a defensive battle possibly beforehand. I just didn't think I would see a Clemson team struggle to score at all. It's not like we saw the kid play last year, Uyunglele. So do you think defenses are getting any better? Are they catching up to the trends that we're seeing now with the spread game and some of the innovations that we're seeing around college football?
Well, I think the Nick Sabans, the Kirby Smart, and the Dabo Sweeners are now recruiting a little bit differently. Yes. And that was Saban's problem early on. What he loved just simply didn't work, for the spread. And I think naturally there's an overreaction on Clemson. One thing about Clemson, they lost a coordinator to USF a couple of years ago, and you have to wonder about that. Clemson hardly ever loses a major coach, and has that had an effect? Maybe it has. It also just seems like they don't have the weapons that they had last year. And by the way, why should they? They lost ATN, who was one of the better runners in the country. They lost the best player in college football last year in Trevor Lawrence. And that's just starting. We get so hung up on hype before the year. And part of it's we love college football. We have really nothing. It's not like we have a draft. It's not like we have a preseason. So we just obsess over these narratives, and a handful of people create the narrative, and we all follow along.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. You mentioned Georgia and being without some players. I know Kirby did address that, that he called it a major spike that they've had, and a lot of those players are vaccinated too, so who knows who will be available for this weekend's game. I mean, is this a major concern just because of what we talked about last week, because of the rules that are in place about forfeiting games if you can't play?
I think it is a concern at Georgia, and it's a subject that none of us really want to talk about, and that's COVID, because we talked about it for a year, and we're exhausted from it, but it's still a real problem, And I think Georgia, hopefully has contained it. I mean, the good news is they're playing UAB, and I'm not disrespecting UAB. They're a really good program, but Georgia, even shorthanded, should be able to eke out a win against this program. So I hope it would just be unconscionable to see this game go by the wayside for Georgia, but that's where we are right now in college football.
Looking at some games for this weekend, and we talked a little bit about Tennessee and Joe Milton's debut, Josh Heupel's debut. I've watched this line move quite a bit. Pittsburgh now a 3.5-point favorite in Knoxville, as they'll honor Johnny Majors, which I think is going to be very cool. But, I mean, what's the concern level of Pittsburgh going into Knoxville and potentially beating Tennessee as Josh Heupel tries to get things on track here?
Well, I think by the end of Saturday afternoon, we're going to know the direction of Tennessee football for this year, and I feel pretty good about it. But I don't think they can have a really good season without this win. This is must, because we know they're going to get trapped in the SEC. We know there's three or four games that they're just not going to be in. I think this is a winnable game right now. I like their chances. I have no earthly idea what I'm basing that on, because I didn't see a lot on Thursday night that really made me feel good. But I also don't think a lot of the Pitt program, and I just think I saw enough from Tennessee that they can score some points. Maybe they can make a couple of stops. It won't be easy, but at the moment, it's Tuesday. I like Tennessee.
Yeah, Paul, I'm going to be honest with you. My reaction after a win Friday morning was, okay, I saw what Joe Milton did. What did the other two do in practice that wasn't good enough? Because, I mean, some of those throws that he didn't make, I was like, oof. You know, try doing that against, you know, a big-time SEC defense.
Yeah, I think the problem is that as much as – I mean, I love this cliche that we often use. Well, the coach knows more than we do. Not always. I can tell you that I heard some LSU people telling me they were sorry Miles Brennan got hurt. They really were. I mean, he was a good player. They hated to see T.J. Finley leave, but they felt like they finally got the right quarterback in Max Johnson. Now, I don't know what they saw, but the Max Johnson I saw Saturday night, didn't get the job done. So sometimes you don't know. We've all seen that where the guy who nobody gave a shot gets gets thrown in there. So I think the pressure of the moment was a lot. Now Thursday night against Bowling Green, don't laugh. But I think now that that's past him, I think it will get easier, even though the competition will be dramatically tougher.
He is Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network and ESPN. Paul, we appreciate the time as always, and we'll do it again next week.
I just want to thank you for not asking me about Vanderbilt.
Well,
let's bury that for this week.
I mean, we got
there's,
you.
There's nothing more you could add there's that we haven't already said. Yeah.
No, I'm just so relieved because I have great respect for Clark Lee, and I hate that he may be driving through town today listening, and I am so glad I don't have to offer a comment on that. Guys, thank you. I hate to run.
Well, he's coming on at 1,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we got him at 1 today, so.
Well, please wish him well and tell him not to buy any green bananas.
Thanks, Paul.
See you guys.
Well, we will have Clark Lee at 1 o'clock. Good stuff from Paul Feinbaum. And, I mean, honestly, we didn't talk about it at length yesterday because what is there to really say at length? It's one game, and we'll see how they recover. But we will talk about it a little bit later, and we will talk to Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee at 1 o'clock. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. One thing that stood out to me is what he said about the targeting and the broadcasters railing on the rule. We all know how this works. He knows how it works. You do wonder, is there going to be some meetings behind the scenes of, hey, guys, could we kind of back off bashing, you know, the rule, bashing, making really, really strong comments? You do wonder. I suspect that, well, we know that goes on. There's a lot of money at stake. And if somebody is butthurt about it, that has a lot of money into the product and doesn't want to hear that stuff from the broadcaster, certainly there will be meetings about it. But I do wonder if that gets quieted, that narrative kind of quiets down, because to me that would spell that there have been some meetings. But if they continue, because this is not going to stop. I mean, it's going to happen all year. I mean, it's not going to slow down. It is part of the game. I mean, it's just you can't avoid those calls and those hits. And if they're 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, I mean, it's hard. So it's going to continue on. And so you do wonder, will that continue? Because I do think if they continue to do it, then they'll kind of force their hand because they don't want to hear that from the broadcasters. And because that does rile up the fan bases, it does rile up everybody who's watching. And then they're on Twitter and it becomes, you know, the kind of the hot topic on social media every single weekend. And they don't want that for the game because here we are on Sports Talk Radio. Sports Talk Radio, this just ends kind of a big deal to start off weeks in every market. Because everybody's talking about the weekend that was. And they don't want everybody talking about that instead of the game. And so you do wonder if that does change. Because I did agree with him that we all know that happens. But will it happen in this case?
I think it depends on how many times that particular situation comes up in big games where a lot of people are watching. We had a discussion about the number of college football games that have an audience of 4 million or more. I think that's probably a little bit of luck of the draw. Will it come up in games like that, key situations? I do think that in general, and this is something that Paul talked about, there is the word narrative comes in a lot. I think it comes in all sports. We've talked about it in the context of the Vezina Trophy or the Rookie of the Year in the NHL, where you might have, especially last year, where the league didn't see the entire rest of the league. Some of the main people, some of the top guys, like a Kirk Herbstreit or a Joel Klatt or a Gary Danielson, some of the top analysts, if they all sort of have a collective thought that sort of gains momentum, I think that does influence a lot of other media and, obviously, a lot of other fans. And so it can start to have legs. And then everybody sort of jumps on the bandwagon. The Heisman Trophy is a great example. I think narrative builds for certain guys, and then it can change, but it certainly builds. And once that momentum goes, sometimes it can be hard to stop, especially in college football where there are so many games every week and it's so regional. It's impossible to watch every team play every week. So we go with narratives a lot.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point. I mean, because I think most of the time those narratives – like, especially what you're saying with the Heisman, they get it right. Now, I can make the argument in 1997, maybe they didn't, but...
That was a big narrative.
That was a huge narrative.
I think that might be the greatest example of how the narrative sort of carried through.
Yeah.
Where Charles Woodson edged out Peyton Manning. Some of the great plays that Charles Woodson made in the spotlight, you know, a one-handed interception or a big punt return... Those had so much flash and narrative to it. It influenced a lot of voters. And I maybe overlooked the fact that when you really look at the stats and what the guy was doing, not that Charles Woodson wasn't a great player or legitimately a candidate, but it just did not outweigh the impact that Peyton Manning had every single week. Now, the problem was Peyton Manning, the narrative was, couldn't beat Florida.
Right.
And, you know, when they played Florida, he didn't really have his greatest games. And I think that was it. That's all the people needed to see. That narrative, very simply in a box, I'm voting for Woodson.
And it was that one, and it was also, I think part of it was the narrative of, you know, when he went into that season, people were ready to just hand him the trophy of like, well, he's going to win it. And so I think sometimes you run into a group of people that go, well, you're telling me that it's already predetermined, and so I'm going to go against you just because I'm going to go against you.
I think there's some of that, too. And then those people... when he had the bad game against Florida, was like, oh, see, he's not the best. And then I'm looking, oh, now look at Woodson's doing. And they were an undefeated team, and so it got legs.
Narratives can be good. Narratives can be bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this is. Now, what is it going to do for these rules that need to change? I think this is if you get everybody on board saying every week on national broadcast that – you know, targeting is,
but that's how rules end up getting changed anyway. Yeah. That, like the Saints Rams interference thing. Yeah. That alone, that one play changed.
But then
changed
they went.
The
but then they went back on it.
Because maybe it wasn't a great idea.
I'd like to see them revisit that because maybe there's a better way to do it. Like I still think, you know, looking at things isn't a bad thing. But you know, it's like with targeting. You know, how can you expedite the review process, but how can you also focus more on the intent in the play to try and get the rule right and try and get the ruling right? And going back to what we were saying earlier, you know, do you have a warning system where you're not thrown out right away if it was a mistake, but you're given a warning of if you do it again, you're out? You know, that.
And it takes a while. I think of goaltender interference. Mm-hmm. Is another one where it went.
Do
through
they still have that right?
It went through an evolution, but it's better than it was
offsides.
A few years ago. But it may never be perfect. Yeah. I think the targeting would be the same way. There's
Nothing's
always
going to
be a little bit of subjectivity, but if you just keep working at it, you can come up with a better system than it is right now.
Yeah.
He also perked up at when I brought up Nick Saban in Alabama. It is pretty amazing, right, in this landscape of college football. And he doesn't get to keep these kids for, you know, a decade or more. And he does have to switch out his roster a lot. And he switches out his coaching staff a lot. And yet he just keeps plugging away. I don't think anybody's going to argue Nick Saban is going to go down as the greatest college football coach ever. I would find it hard-pressed. I know all the greats, all the great names that people are going to throw out from the past. But in fairness, the way he's done with, what, 130 Division I schools, it's harder now. You play more games, way more games. And so, depending on which coach we're talking about in what decade, way more games, competing against way more schools for recruiting. I don't think anybody's going to argue Nick Saban is the greatest college football coach ever. The question is, how does he do it? How does he keep Alabama at this level where – we always say that there's bound to always be a dip, or even the greats have an off season. How does he never have, like, an off season for them is not winning the national championship. Like, that's an off season. Like, oh, they lost in the national championship game, or, you know, isn't that an off season? I guess 1 year they lost the SEC championship game. 1 year, still made it into the playoffs, went on to win the national championship game. I mean, how do you keep it at this level this long where it really looks like you have no competition?
Yeah, real quick to your point about greatest of all time, we didn't really get to spend a lot of time on this, but ESPN did a 101 greatest college football coaches. I think it was in the last 50 years, 75 years, something somewhere in there. And they had Saban number one over Bear. It was Saban, Bear Bryant. So they did put Saban number one. So, I mean, that right there shows you that I think people are already leaning that way, that he's the greatest of all time.
No disrespect, and I'm just telling you, I get it. He played with the cards that he was dealt, and there weren't very, you know, how many Division I schools were they back then? How many were there? I don't know.
I don't know.
Half?
Probably.
Right? I mean, you know, I don't know what the exact number is. And back then, kids would just come to a big school just to say they were playing there, even if they never saw the field. They didn't care. Like, today's mentality is, if I'm not starting, I don't care who you are, I'm going somewhere else. That's a lot of kids' mentality. Not back then. Like I said, not his fault, not, you know, marking it against him. I'm just saying it was a lot different, and he had a lot of advantages that, quite frankly, coaches today don't have. And I don't want to take anything away from his resume. I get it. He should clearly be number two in Bear Bryant. I just think clearly Nick Saban is the greatest. But how does he even – he can't even get competition. Like, these games are a joke. It's rare to get an out – forget a loss. It's hard to get an Alabama close game. Like, that to me is mind-blowing. At this, how long he's been able to do it, where it is hard to even get a game. How did we get to this point?
I think if we truly knew the answer to that, then you would have other teams that are close to him. I mean, clearly he has the juju, you know, however you want to put it.
Paul made a good point. He said he can select – he's got first dibs. Mm-hmm. You could argue Vanderbilt's in this area for baseball now, nationwide. You know, they can go and they can almost pick and choose among the best players. Which ones are the right ones for us? Which type of guys do we want among the elite? And they're making the right choices, Alabama is, to sustain. It's so impressive that they lose all these guys to the draft, and then they come back with a lot of new faces, but they're still – just as good. They don't drop off. So the development of those guys that they're selecting, they have a great formula of being able to sustain like that. It is really remarkable, especially, well, in a league like the SEC, where the arms race is always so much the commitment by so many of the programs to chase them. They can't catch them.
And here's the other part of this, guys. You know, not only does he have, you know, players for 3 or 4 years and rotate them in and out, it's coaches too. I mean, he goes through his entire coaching staff because they move on. They get jobs because of all the winning that they do, and they still don't miss a beat. I mean, you know, we've been sitting here, part of the narrative with the Titans all summer is, got a new offensive coordinator. What's the offense going to look like? How much is it going to change? Is it going to affect Ryan Tannehill?
Which are normal questions to ask.
Whereas if you're Nick Saban, it doesn't matter if it's Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin, or Bill O'Brien. It just, whatever. They don't miss a beat. Now, obviously, he probably tells them.
He's learned how to adapt. He's learned how to tackle that. And he did a long time ago. Sometimes it's when, you know, bringing the guys into the stable of, you know, whatever the cubicle room that he keeps these guys in, this bullpen of ex-coaches.
You think
that
they have cubicles?
I think they have cubicles in the basement somewhere. You know, they don't have the really super nice
office.
I think
Bill O'Brien has an office.
You think so?
I think he has an office.
But what's his title?
Offensive coordinator.
Well, obviously he has an office now, but I'm talking about the Butch Davis and he's had some of these guys in
the
bullpen.
Oh, the ones that are in the
before
program.
He elevates them. He takes them out of exile.
Butch probably
puts them in
had
the basement with the red stapler and the cubicle. And then he's got them developed. It's like he's developing his farm system. Sometimes it's a coach that failed somewhere or had a, like Sarkisian, had off-field issues, but he says, okay, he's got a good mind. He's got value. Yeah. Let's just bring him in. Teach him what our program's about, and then I elevate him when the spot opens up.
When he graduates out of the program. The Nick Saban coaching rehabilitation program.
Right. Now, if he fixes Butch Davis, then we've really got something. Butch Jones, I mean.
Well, Butch Jones, he did. Butch Jones got a job.
He graduated. Let's see what he does.
They don't all go on to be successful.
No.
Some of them are not capable of getting a job on their own because of their image at that point. And then he's able to kind of fix that image, or at least it just goes away with time, and then they get an opportunity. That's what it really does.
But whether they go on, like I don't know what Lane Kiffin will end up doing at Ole Miss, but Lane Kiffin, when he went to Alabama, I was like, I'm not a believer.
Sure.
In him, but he
and you had every right to feel that way at that time.
And he did a great job for Alabama.
Sarkisian
did a great job for Alabama, and now we don't know what it's going to happen at Texas. But he did a great job for Alabama.
Look where his star was. Look where his name was before he got to Alabama.
Yeah,
I don't know where they were. I don't know where else he was going to get a job.
Well, I mean, like McElwain was not successful,
but he was at Alabama.
He was at Alabama.
That's all that matters to Nick Saban, ultimately.
Right.
What you
do on
your own.
He doesn't care what they do next.
I guess he cares. He'd like to see them do well.
Well, McElwain was successful. When he left, when he went to, where'd he go, Colorado State?
Well, that's
he was
true, yeah.
successful.
He was, yeah, Colorado
He absolutely
State.
Was successful because it landed him the Florida job.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
Kirby Smart?
That's what I was going to say. Kirby, in my mind, is probably the most successful assistant after post-Alabama. Agreed?
I mean, we know nobody's beaten him, so they haven't had great success because not one of them has been able to even beat him. Forget, you know, elevate
Kirby
the program past him.
That's perfect for Nick Saban. They go on, they do well, but they can't beat him.
They can't beat him.
Right. Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. It really is. And by the way, he's showing no signs. And I get it. He's elite. I mean, if there's anybody that should get it from all the conversations I've brought up on the show, why is he being able to do it at this age? Because he's elite. He's different than he's not just everybody else. Everybody else starts winding down, but he's elite. Nick Saban is just different than everybody else, and I don't know when he's going to stop. I mean, is he? What, I don't even know his age. What is it? He's got to be
70.
Almost 70, right? Is he? He's 70.
Yeah, I think we talked about this the other day. Halloween, he turned 70.
I mean. What, 5 years, 10 years? I don't know what the number is.
I mean, realistically, I think I don't see him coaching to 80, but I mean, he's done things that are unrealistic. So, you know, who knows? It's up to him. I mean, there's only one person on the Miss Terry may have something to say about it, but you know, there's really only two people on the face of this earth that can make that decision, and their last name is Saban.
Yeah. I mean, I think for sure he's got pretty comfortable saying he's got a good 5 years left in him for sure.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, even if they win one game, like if he won one game this year, you think anybody at Alabama is going to say, Nick, time to hang it up? No, they're not.
No. No, he has earned the right to end it whenever he wants to end
right.
it. No matter
I'll
what
tell
it looks
you
like
when
at
I'm
the
done.
End. Yeah, no yeah. matter what it looks like when he's done, right? It doesn't matter. And I don't think there'll ever be a – I don't think there'll ever be a dip in him. Does anybody think there's going to be a Tom Brady dip? I don't think so. I just think the minute the dip even creeps into the equation, I think he'll retire. We'll never see the dip.
Yeah, and I think that has a better chance of happening than Saban.
And Saban, too. I just think the minute he feels like it, you know, it's he's losing it, which I don't even know how he could have that feeling because there's no proof of it at all. None. So, I mean, he's got the winning formula. He has the winning playbook. It's like Back to the Future, right? He's got the book that's telling you who's going to win down the road. Like, he's got the winning playbook. So how is it going to change just because he's 75 years old? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it ever changes. I just think one day he wakes up and says, you know, maybe it's time just to wind down. And
10 natties, I'm done.
Yeah, right. Right, I got more rings or more rings than I've got fingers, so I think I'm going to call it a career. I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to see a dip. I don't know if we ever see a dip in Brady. I don't know if we ever see a dip in Saban. I think the minute either one of them feel like that's coming or it's happening, they just walk away, and so we don't even see it from them, which is why they'll go away the greatest of all time. And I don't think there's an argument with Tom Brady either. He's going to go down as the greatest of all time, and the only knock he's going to have is the people that hate the Patriots, and they're going to bring up cheating. And I get it. He's never going to get away from that. It's just going to be attached to his resume. It doesn't change the fact that he's going to still go away as the greatest quarterback of all time, maybe the greatest player of all time in the National Football League. All right, we'll come back. We're going to start hour number two with Joe Rexroad. From Robbie and Rexroad. We do that next.